Hello and welcome to Owl Radio. I am Shama Kapasi, and during the next half hour, I will be reading articles from the Southern Living. This is going to be the Southern Living November 2022 issue, but there are several articles in there that I thought would be fun for this holiday season and that weren't covered in November, so we can go forward from there. As I stated, this program is brought to you by Owl Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. So during this half hour, I'll start with the letter from the editor, and it's Life at SNL. The quote is, "Always have an attitude of gratitude," by Sterling K. Brown. So Sid Evans is the editor-in-chief, and he usually writes the letter from the editor, and we'll start with that. Something old, something new. Aaron and Ben Napier tap into history to build a bright future. A few months ago, I awoke early one morning and drove down to Laurel, Mississippi to spend some time with Aaron and Ben Napier at their new place in the country. If you don't know them, Ben and Aaron star in a show on HGTV called Hometown, which is all about their mission to revive Laurel one house at a time. Over six seasons, they have helped people renovate 90 homes with an emphasis on historic properties that have plenty of character and charm. Along with their efforts to re-energize the downtown, open new shops, and support local businesses, the show has had a transformational effect on Laurel, making it one of the hottest tourist destinations in the whole state. Their latest project is special because they renovated their house for themselves. Turn to hometown history. A 1930s brick Tudor located on what used to be a chicken farm. They've been looking for a place where their girls, Helen 4 and May 1, could play in the dirt and spend more time outside and hopefully stay off their screens. They also wanted to host a room to host and entertain family and friends, especially during the holidays. To make it feel like home, Erin arranged dozens of old photos in the entrance hall and hung her daughter's colorful artwork in the stairwell. They'd only been there a few months when I visited, but it already felt comfortable, with lots of exposed wooden beams, furniture they'd collected over the years, and treasured heirlooms. As they've done so many times on the show, they made an old house feel new again. After the tour, we took Ben's vintage Jeep Wagoneer to get cheeseburgers and fried dill pickles at the Phillips Drive-In, known locally as PDI, a beloved Laurel institution that's been around since opening as a Dairy Queen in 1948. Then we headed to the Laurel Rogers Museum of Art, which houses one of the most extensive collections in the state, inside a gorgeous historic building shaded by giant oak trees. Erin worked at the museum in high school, and she seemed to know every piece in there, from the intricate Native American baskets to the paintings by Winslow Homer and Albert Bierstadt. Although she must have seen the exhibits countless times, she showed each one with all the enthusiasm of a kid at Disney World. It's not unusual for Southerners to love old things, but Ben and Erin have also turned that into a vision for the future. I hope you will find some inspiration in their home, their story, and their town. By Sid Evans. What's in your recipe box? So Southern Living's asking, we're cooking up a special issue for next fall and would love for you to be a part of it. All you have to do is share your cherished family favorites for autumn entertaining with us. Snap a quick picture of a beloved butter-stained recipe card or type up your most requested original dishes and email them to us at recipebox@southernliving.com. We will review, test, and taste the best of them and include our top picks in a cookbook-style collection in the magazine. Just remember to make sure the recipes are original, great for fall entertaining, and of course, deliciously Southern. So maybe listeners, that might be something you want to do if you have a recipe on hand. And once again, their email is recipebox, recipebox, at southernliving.com. All right. Next, let's go to In Season, which is giving back, planting good seeds. So the New Orleans chef, Emeril Agassi, is raising a new crop of young cooks through his school gardens and teaching kitchens. How fun. When you're a TV celebrity chef and win $125,000 on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, what do you do with the money? For New Orleans' Emeril Agassi, the answer was easy. He phoned his friend, sister Lillian McCormick, founder of St. Michael's Special School in New Orleans, which is privately funded for students who have intellectual and development disabilities, and offered a lifeline in the form of his winnings. For high-profile chefs, the options for giving back are endless. But that donation, 22 years ago, was Agassi's first taste of what it meant to make a real difference. Grateful for his enormous success, not only on television but also with his award-winning cookbooks and restaurants throughout the nation, Agassi, who grew up in Massachusetts and later made a home in New Orleans, found himself in a position to empower and inspire young people. Just 2 years after his game show win, he launched the Emeril Agassi Foundation with the aim of mentoring youth through food. His organization has since granted more than $18 million to children's charities supporting nutrition, arts, and culinary programs. But early on, the chef realized that a major obstacle for young children in the U.S. was a disconnect with food, not knowing where it comes from and not having access to enough good fresh ingredients. Even kids who do have adequate meals sometimes still believe that juice comes from a carton of carrots come from a can. In 2016, Agassi turned his focus to establishing teaching kitchens and edible schoolyards nationwide. And his organization hired Katie Moulards to launch what's since become its signature outreach, Emeril's Culinary Garden and Teaching Kitchen. This initiative helps kids in kindergarten through eighth grade to learn to seed, harvest, cook, and share the gifts of the garden. As the program expanded, the team realized that the foundation needed to find a way to engage the parents. They began inviting families to come on Saturdays and harvest what they wanted out of the garden, as long as they did something with the food at home that included the child. Having the support of the family when the kid is out of the classroom is crucial, says Agassi. At Dr. John Ochsner Discovery Health Sciences Academy, one of the partner sites, seventh grader Nakira is gaining useful know-how as well as confidence in the kitchen. She loves learning cooking techniques, which she then teaches her father and me, says her mother, Raina Edwards. They frequently make one of Nakira's favorite dishes, Yaka Men, which is a beloved local noodle soup spiced with Creole seasoning. Each family often has its own secret ingredient. The program has changed the way we cook, says Edwards. We have decreased the amount of processed meals we eat and make a lot more fresh food together at home. Emeril's Culinary Garden and Teaching Program currently has six official partner schools and across the country from D.C. to California, with the hopes of reaching more, especially as others see the impact it has on whole communities. But even with nothing left to prove, the chef remains committed to mentoring the next generation of cooks, gardeners, and teachers. And he knows it's not solely up to him. Everyone can give back in small ways, he says, particularly when it comes to investing in people. Volunteer your time. Be present, says Lagasse. You don't have to have means in order to have meaning. So that is in the give back section. Next, we go to Southern Tales, one of my favorite parts. This is, so the pet of the month is 1.5 years old. Its hometown is Arlington, Virginia. And the explorer has romped on both coasts in Yosemite National Park. If Whiskey could hike every day, she would, says owner Amber Aquart. Whiskey's latest painting raised over $180 for a special needs pet rescue fund, Aquart says. Wow. All right, let's hear more about Whiskey. So meet a down-to-earth canine destined for the spotlight. When your big break comes before your first birthday, some might say it was meant to be. I brought Whiskey home with the intention of training her for TV work from day one, says owner Amber Aquart, a celebrated pet trainer in Arlington, Virginia. Luckily, Nova Scotia duck trolling retrievers like Whiskey are quick learners. In a few short months, the spunky pup snagged starring roles in several ads, including a 2021 L.L. Bean Christmas commercial that cemented her status as a showbiz star. I think the world fell in love with her personality and sweet disposition on screen, says Aquart. But acting isn't the only trick Whiskey has under her paw. In fact, she knows over 100. The jack-of-all-trades excels in many activities, from painting, seriously, to competitive dog sports like dock diving, to paddleboarding on the Potomac. She has also worked as a service animal and is currently training to become a bona fide lifesaver. Learning skills like retrieving medication and calling for help. Puppy perfection? Perhaps, but this dog has stayed incredibly humble throughout it all. Whiskey is a ball of fun, silliness, and joy, Aquart says. She's just as sweet and adorable in person as she appears on TV. How sweet. Wish we all had such celebrated pets, but ours bring us joy in our own humble ways, I believe. All right. So the next article I would like to read for you all is Picture of Health, and it's Table Talk. How to navigate tricky and sometimes nosy questions from well-meaning loved ones, which is appropriate for this time of year. People in our lives don't always know how to appropriately show their concern for us. But we can help them by managing our own responses, says Andrew Anderson, a licensed professional counselor at Launchpad Counseling in Richmond, Virginia. Here's how to tackle difficult conversations that may arise during holiday gatherings. All right, the first one. When they ask about touchy political topics. So know your audience and how far you're willing to go with the discussion. If you love to debate and it won't put your partner in an awkward position, then lean all the way in. These conversations will inevitably come up in many households, especially given the politically charged climate we live in. Even so, be careful not to agree to something you don't believe, simply to avoid an argument. That will only lead to frustration. Instead, learn to deflect to safer topics if you know these political or religious conversations aren't going anywhere positive. Number two, when they ask about your dating life. Ooh. These types of questions are dangerous because they hit on something that we most likely already sensitive about. If single, you can always fall back on the general, lack of quality partners discussion, or, there's just not enough time in my schedule assertion. Be honest and show confidence. If you're focused on a career and dating has taken a backseat, just say that. You also have the right to say, no comment. One of the advantages of being an adult is that your personal life can be kept private from anyone you decide, even if they gave birth to you. All right. So when they ask about your next steps, yucky. If you're just entering the workforce, many adults may feel entitled to speak about your life. Know yourself and be patient enough to listen if you feel that someone is genuinely trying to help. At other times, their advice may be steeped in an unhelpful mindset of outdated beliefs about the times we live in. In that case, some education about the current market may help them set realistic expectations. Either way, be gracious and humble. Whenever you are new to something, the insight of experienced and trusted people can often be beneficial. Wow. On the Run. First held in Buffalo, New York in 1896, the annual YMCA Turkey Trot has since been a treasured or dreaded, if jogging isn't your thing, Thanksgiving Day tradition across the country. This year, squeeze in your daily cardio and invest in your heart health by signing up for a local fun run or look for an event near you at active.com. So there you go. Maybe it's a walk, maybe it's a trot, maybe it's an activity, something fun. Well, let's now move to Grumpy. Grumpy always has good advice at home in the gardening section. And Grumpy Gardener is Steve Bender. So here we go. We live in Central Florida and our avocado tree is 60 foot tall. How can we top the tree so that the avocados don't hang so high up? Wow, how lucky to have an avocado tree in your backyard. Do you own a helicopter? If so, you could harness up your husband, hand him a chainsaw, and lower him down. What could go wrong? If not, you'll have to do something boring, like hiring a professional tree service to prune it. But you'll do this again and again, as 60 feet is the natural height for a regular avocado tree. A better option is to plant a dwarf avocado like Little Cato. It only grows 10 to 15 feet tall. Good advice, Grumpy. Sad-looking gardenia. I bought a gardenia plant in the summer. It was doing well, but some of the leaves are turning yellow and falling off. Help! By Ismail. Just chill out, buddy. Older foliage of gardenias and other broadleaf evergreens naturally turn yellow and drop during this time of year. But it'll be replaced come spring, so chill. All right, elephant ear emergency. I live in Richmond, Virginia, and planted an elephant ear bulb in the spring. Can I leave it outside this winter, or should I dig it up and store it to replant next season? Lorraine. Overwintering an elephant's ear outdoors in your area is iffy. It might come back, but might not. A surer way to save it is to dig up the bulb now, place it inside a small bag, and store it in a cool, dry place indoors until you're ready to plant next spring when daytime temperatures reach the 70s. I didn't know that about elephant ears. Burnt up about snakes? My husband said the grumpy gardener always responds, right? Ask him if he knows how to deal with snakes in our rock wall. Ooh. He's seen some copperheads near there and is debating whether to burn the whole place down and move to the city. Do you have any suggestions, Francis? Yes. Before he lights that match, make sure you've saved his vintage carpenter's albums, as well as his signed Marie Osmond photo, or maybe consider a solution that doesn't involve arson. Copperheads come around for one good reason. Looking for rodents like rats, mice, and chipmunks to eat. I imagine those critters are finding hiding places in the rock wall or in tall weeds nearby. Eliminate shelter for the rodents and the snakes will go elsewhere. Wow. Sowing hellebores. I collected seeds from my hellebores in little bags in the spring. When do you think is a good time to plant them? Should I start them in pots inside? Kyla. Hellebore seeds need winter chilling, so don't start them inside. Sow them outdoors instead. Hand till a place in the garden to loosen the soil. Bury the seeds about a quarter inch deep. Mark the spot so you won't forget where it is, and the hellebore seeds should sprout next spring. Next question. Yucky yellow buds. I live in Jacksonville, Florida, and I have three beautiful yellow Chinese hibiscus plants. A few months ago, the leaves started turning yellow. Now the flower buds fall off before opening. Any ideas? Krista. Bud drop on hibiscus is almost always due to growing conditions. Soil that's too wet or dry, reflected heat from pavement, and strong drying winds can do this. Healthy plants recover quickly, though, so keep the ground moist and make sure it drains. Thank you, Grumpy. All right, Grumpy's gripe of the month. I assume that my readers are discerning enough to avoid the majority of stupid ideas they confront. But just in case, let me warn you about this particularly moronic one. A gardening website advises people to reduce the number of annoying flies in their houses by filling their rooms with carnivorous plants like Venus flytraps and pitcher plants. This is so dumb. For one thing, carnivorous plants hate growing indoors. They like sunny bugs. For another, they consume only a tiny fraction of bugs available. And if these plants ate all of them, they would starve. So how about trying something sensible, you know, like emptying the trash can on a monthly basis or patching the screen on the kitchen door. Lol, Grumpy. Thank you. Okay. Do you know this about plants? There's the sky pencil, which is the Japanese holly, and this is a very upright evergreen, and it helps you out of a tight spot. Do you need a screening plant to grow in a skinny area? Well, stop your search right here. Sky pencil, which is a Japanese holly, scientific name is Ilex crenata, grows 6 to 10 feet tall, about 2 feet wide, and seldom needs pruning. While it makes an excellent narrow head, you can grow it in a container or use it as a vertical accent out in the garden. Sky pencil is not fussy. Suited to USDA zones 5 to 8, it grows in sun or light shade and prefers well-drained soil. Deer don't like it, and so what are you waiting for? Get the lead out. Your garden center awaits, by Steve Bender. And finally, I'm going to read to you Rick Bragg's Southern Journal. And this time he's talking out, let them eat giblets. Why this mystery meat was conspicuously absent from my childhood feasts. We were deprived of giblets. When I was a boy, my mother distrusted them as a rule, but not because they were organ meats, innards, or necks. We believed in livers, gizzards, and other such delicacies most of the time. I now understand that it actually had to do with the packaging of the bird and her suspicions about the vast turkey conglomerate. I shouldn't have cared, of course. My mother, the best cook in the whole world, prepared a Thanksgiving meal that most folks could only dream of. But one thing always bothered me. You can't have giblet gravy without the giblets. And I have been all my life predisposed to like gravy. It sounded so good when I heard people talk about a traditional feast, movies and sitcoms, and even on the public television channel. They recited their menus with almost religious fervor. Roast turkey with stuffing and giblet gravy seemed like a kind of holiday trifecta. Julia Child went elbow deep in giblets, and that woman was the goddess of gravy. I seem to recall that Ricky and Lucy enjoyed them with Fred and Ethel on I Love Lucy. I imagine they even had that gravy on Gunsmoke. Matt, how about joining me and Festus here for a beer, Miss Kitty might have asked on the show. If it'll be the same for you, Miss Kitty, I'd rather have some giblets, Matt could have responded. But not in my house. I used to stand amazed by my mother as she dug inside the giant turkey for the innards. They came out not one piece at a time, but all together inside a little paper pack. It seemed like the neat economical arrangement to me, but she just would not get it out of her head that someone might have switched giblets on us. It could have easily happened, she thought, on the endless poultry assembly line. The organs from one bird could be foisted inside the cavity of another, and this not only careless, my mother believed, but highly improper. Giblets extracted from our turkey might, in the complex packaging process, wind up in a bird in Detroit, San Diego, or Roxmart. Would the handlers be all that particular on a processing line that could stretch to the moon? My mother couldn't take the chance on it. She gave some to the cats, but they would eat anything. The rest of it mysteriously disappeared. Cats again may have been involved. When in doubt, it's always safe to blame a feline. The point is, there was no gravy of any kind in our house. I used to plead for it, but only got the side eye from her and threats. I do not believe she would have actually given the drumsticks away to passing strangers, but I decided it was best not to push it. Every now and then, we would see or hear of a giblet-related disaster, and she would feel a kind of vindication. One of my cousins roasted a 13-pound turkey with the paper packet still inside. Probably wasn't even that turkey's natural giblets. Know how? She said disdainfully. Like they had been purloined from a bantam rooster or some low-flying goose. So that was Rick Bragg's contribution to the Southern Journal. You have been listening to Southern Living on Owl Radio. You can listen to Owl Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.owlradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Shama saying goodbye from Owl Radio.